The ticky ticky buzz, the sun wakes the sky. I fumble through my fuzz and buzz, Mr. I. Tell him scoop the beats in a flying saucer kit. Meet me at the port with the nickel bags and shit. Told my pops I'm out, earthbound with the crew. He said, butterfly, made the boogie be with you. Left my mom's a note with these quotes on her trunk. It says I split to earth to resurrect the funk.
Welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks. I cover the National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com and TheComeback.com, and I also cover the Cleveland Browns for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
You.
It's Super Bowl week.
That it is.
Sunday night, the 50th iteration of the NFL's championship game will be played at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, home, of course, to the San Francisco 49ers, in the AFC, the Denver Broncos, in the NFC, the Carolina Panthers. Only one can win.
We'll note that it's Super Bowl 50 and not Super Bowl L.
Correct. They're going with 50 because it's a nice, beautiful number in which they can emboss in gold all around the National Football League and all over the city of San Francisco and in the Bay Area.
Well, and just the idea of Super Bowl L, you know, when, you know, W is win, L is loss, you know, so then, like, everybody loses if it's Super Bowl L.
Good point. Good point. So, yes, of course, the Carolina Panthers and Denver Broncos will be vying for the Lombardi Trophy on Sunday night, and a little bit later on in the show, we will break down all the key matchups of the game and, of course, make our predictions as to who we think will win this year's championship game. But before we get into that, of course, there's some news and notes around the league, because there always are. Let's start with a couple of retirements, or at least in one case, a reported retirement. First up, defensive end Justin Tuck, after 11 seasons in the National Football League at age 32, will be, or has announced already, his retirement from the game. Spent his first 9 seasons with the New York Giants and the last 2 with the Oakland Raiders. Known as a pass rush specialist, of course, with that very intimidating face mask on his helmet. You know, you could see in the last couple of years in Oakland that his career was kind of winding down. Played in 5 games this season before landing on injured reserve. So one Mr. Tuck calling it quits. And also reportedly Detroit Lions wide receiver Calvin Johnson at age 30 also plans to hang him up, though he hasn't made the news official yet, and the Lions are trying to keep him around for one more year, albeit with a pay cut. It looks like the Lions will potentially be without top playmaking wideout Calvin Johnson in the 2016 season. You know, he doesn't have a lot of incentive to keep playing football, of course. He's accomplished most everything that he can accomplish at a high level, aside from, you know, helping the Lions get to and win a Super Bowl. He's already made $119 million over the course of his career, only Larry Fitzgerald making more. So it looks like Calvin, barring a Hail Mary by the Lions, will also be hanging up his cleats along with one Mr. Justin Tuck. And I'm sure as the resident Lions fan member of this podcast, I'm sure you have a few feelings in particular about Johnson's reported retirement plans.
Yeah, I didn't say anything on Twitter just because how do you accurately sum things up in that many characters? I don't know. Calvin Johnson was a joy to watch. He was I'm just assuming he's done. I mean, if he's the idea that he's thinking about retiring to the point where he's basically told them internally that he's retiring probably, and they're going to say, hey, can you come back for a pay cut? Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But so I'm just assuming he's out. He was a joy to watch. He's one of the best receivers I've seen in my lifetime.
I think he's had a Hall of Fame caliber career.
I think that there's certainly an argument for that for certainly for a receiver that has 0 playoff wins. You know, I think a case can be made for Calvin. He was kind of the league's you know, you go to best receiver, you know, as far as everybody, I think most people would
for
have argued
for many years of his career,
for a good half of his career at least. You know, just I don't know that we've ever seen anybody with that combination of size and speed. That was the thing, is that the guy was not just this big gangly receiver that could jump and catch all this stuff, is that he was that fast on top of all that. So,
and he's the man to single-handedly make Matthew Stafford look like more than just a mediocre quarterback at times. So that's going to be interesting to see what Stafford's future is, because I feel like Stafford's ceiling has already been reached when you talk about the ways when he's been on point with Calvin over the years. And so I feel like now we're really going to see the true colors of Matt Stafford, the quarterback. Because we saw, even in times when Calvin was out with injuries over the last couple of years, Stafford can't move the ball very well without him.
I mean, you take away that kind of talent from any quarterback, and things aren't going to seem as good.
Sure.
But you know, with that, I mean, I think that he's shown times where, you know, that Calvin missed some games, and he had to basically go to Golden Tate over the last year or two, and you know, I think that it wasn't as steep a drop off as maybe a lot of people would think. You know, obviously we'll see where, you know, how he looks going forward. I feel like a lot of Stafford's issues have been, you know, other things, and you know, and not necessarily that Calvin was, you know, making him out to be this elite, you know, not elite quarterback, but like high end quarterback. And now that Calvin's gone, he's just going to be ho hum. He still has all of the skills and abilities that he had before. He still has, you know, his biggest issue in my mind has always been between his ears. So,
right. Well, for me, my biggest problem with Matthew Stafford is the throwing mechanics and the footwork, which have never been consistent.
Yeah, and you know, with the type of coaching he's gotten since he's gotten to the pro level, it's, you know, it's been varied,
all over the place,
varied, and yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I think one good thing about Caldwell is they're keeping the whole band together, and he really responded after Jim Bob Cooter got you know, elevated to the offensive coordinator position. And you know, maybe having some stability there for a minute, even, you know, who knows how long that minute's going to last, but maybe having that stability there will help him turn some of those corners as far as the development and his footwork and all that stuff.
But there's no doubt,
especially if he can't rely on having a guy as good as Calvin.
But
out
there's
there.
No doubt the impact that Calvin has made on Stafford's career and
has been
on the Lions
one.
Franchise and on
him,
that offense and how the
gone,
offense has developed.
Definitely him being there was a positive for Stafford, and him being gone is not going to help.
No.
But I also think that, like, I don't know that means, you know, the ship has sailed on Matthew Stafford.
Sure.
I think that he's still 27 years old or whatever. He's got plenty of years.
Yeah, he's remarkably young considering how
many
years
he's
been in the league.
He was very young when he came out.
Yeah.
And so he's still like 27-ish or whatever it is. He's still got plenty of years left, I think, assuming he can, you know, show some progress and take some strides and move his game forward a little bit. But no, I mean, we'll just have to see where things go with him and with that offense. Frankly, it's, you know, I think that's beside the point. I think, you know, if Calvin's walking away, it's not beside the point. It's definitely to the point, but it's beside the point of what Calvin's doing and the fact that he's walking away.
Yeah.
And honestly, when Barry walked away at basically the same age,
Barry Sanders, you mean?
Sorry. We're talking about the Lions. I say Barry. There's one Barry that we're talking. It's not Joe Barry. When Barry Sanders left the game at basically the same age and similarly heralded at his position, I'll say. Although I still think that he's the greatest running back ever. But that's obviously a biased Lions fan view. So, when that happened, I remember feeling weird about it, and it was like,
well, everybody gets up in arms when a football player gives up the game, retires when he's still playing at a high level. But at the same time, you can be disappointed in that as a fan or as a spectator of the sport. But I mean, Calvin has the control over his life and his career.
Exactly.
And what he wants to do going forward. And this is a guy who, over the last few years, have had numerous nagging injuries that haven't had opportunities to heal. He's made a tremendous amount of money. So if financial stability is a reason why he pursued it, part of why he pursued an NFL career, he's definitely got that.
Sure.
And if he doesn't think that this is going to go any farther in a place where he wants to keep doing this to himself, essentially,
mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to. I mean, it's his career and it's his life.
It's just a popular opinion amongst Lions fans, and I've seen this quite a bit since this stuff started swirling around, that the Lions ruined Barry Sanders and made him quit, and they're doing the same thing. So basically, they're going to ruin one of the best running backs of all time, if not the best, and one of the best receivers of all time, and if not the best. And I mean, I still don't think he's as good as Jerry Rice, but still, the idea that it's the same thing, I think, is kind of absurd. The team was in a completely different situation at that time when Barry left, and there was an issue with the coach at the time and all this. With Calvin, I just really feel like, one, the game of football is different now than it was in 1999 or
right.
2000 or whenever that was. And everybody knows so much more about how damaging this game can be on guys, that I applaud any guy that leaves the game on his own terms.
Yeah.
If you want to keep playing and you're healthy, by all means, do what you want. But if you're just there to make a check, you know, at that point, and especially when you've made a bunch of money and you're kind of you don't have that burning desire to play the game anymore, you need to walk away before
sure.
something worse happens to you and your afterlife is not the same as it could be. So
correct.
I applaud him. I was a big fan of his, obviously, the entire time. It's a little sad to see him go this early, but, you know, I completely understand.
Yeah, it's his
and
life. And
absolutely. You know, like I said, I applaud him for going out on his own terms.
Another development in the NFL coming out of the meetings and all the things that are happening surrounding the Super Bowl out in Santa Clara is now there's a new type of Rooney Rule, if you will, in the NFL for executive jobs for teams. Teams are now required to at least interview at least one female candidate for open executive jobs, much as teams are required to interview at least one minority candidate for coaching vacancies, aka, of course, the Rooney Rule. You know, I think this is great because the more women who are involved in the NFL, the better. You talk to certain coaches, GMs, other team executives around the league who have or do work with, you know, closely with women, and you know, it's just you have a different experience in the room. You have a different perception of things in the room. It's not just somebody who, you know, has been an NFL lifer or started as a football player, but has a different appreciation and understanding of the game. Also, I feel like, you know, this is the NFL, and just because it's a sport that men play doesn't mean that women can't be in control of the business side of things, or even, you know, to the point with Jen Welter on the coaching side of things.
Well, and the other, I can't remember her name, that got hired in Buffalo as a permanent assistant.
Right,
just
right,
now.
As the quality control
just recently,
assistant.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's good. I mean, we obviously don't hear a lot about women being interviewed for a lot of these high-level NFL team executive jobs. And, you know, there's not a lot of history there. I mean, you've got Katie Brown, Mike Brown's daughter, with the Cincinnati Bengals. You had Amy Trask for a long time with the Oakland Raiders. But there aren't a lot of teams that bring a lot of women aboard in high-profile and executive situations, positions. So I feel like We'll see where it goes, if it's a step in the right direction. We'll see if women actually get hired in these positions, or if, like, the Rooney Rule, especially when you're talking about assistant, not even just head coach positions, you know, you just kind of – teams like to bring in, you know, token minority candidates that they have no intention of ever hiring. So we'll see if this actually enacts any sort of meaningful change in the NFL in terms of the makeup of the executives around the league.
You know, I think it's obviously a positive step. It's just as, like you said, as with the Rooney Rule, even if all it's doing is getting for the coaches minority candidates, and for the executives women candidates, if that's all it's doing is, you know, someone's satisfying a requirement to have someone in, then that's still a decent thing, because the good things can come out of that.
Yeah, because at least now there's going to be a legitimate pool of women,
sure.
female candidates who are qualified for these NFL executive
mm-hmm.
positions, who are going to be considered for them.
Right.
So at the very least, teams are going to become aware of these women, and at the very least, there's at least that. At least that they have to pay attention now
right.
to women who are qualified for these jobs, where they would just be like, women, NFL, ha!
Right, and that's, I think that's been the, you know, the mentality that's obviously outdated. I mean, there's you can point to front office guys all over the league who have never played football, much less professional football.
I mean, you can point to coaches around the league who have not played football. True. For example, Todd Haley.
True.
Coordinator for the Steelers.
And so, at least with respect to this conversation about this rule, you know, I see why. What is a good argument why a woman can't have that job? You know, a front office job where, like I just said, I think the majority of the front office people are not ex-football people. So
no, they're just merely qualified to do this job.
Right. And so, you know, why can't a woman be qualified? And the reason it's not that way right now, and why they have to implement a rule like this, is just outdated thinking. So,
right.
So no, it's definitely a step in the right direction. Again, even if it only gets some interviews for some candidates and creates a small candidate pool, you know, I think that's really the only way to move the whole concept forward is for it to happen more often. And the only way to get it to happen, and this is a way to get it to happen more often, and because then everybody has less of that outdated thinking that, you know, that doesn't work, you know,
right.
when it's stupid.
And I mean, you know, this is a step forward when we talk about women in the NFL, but another step backward, if you will, today. We got to talk about this briefly. Johnny Manziel, soon to be former Cleveland Browns quarterback Johnny Manziel and ex-girlfriend Colleen Crowley were involved in another incident on January 30th with Ms. Crowley alleging that Manziel struck her, threatened her, threatened to kill her, threatened to kill himself. The police report is all very disturbing. And also just really follows that pattern of behavior that we saw from the first police report a few months back in Cleveland, the roadside argument, if you will, between Manziel and Crowley. No charges have been filed. No charges will be filed either by the Dallas or Fort Worth Police Department, they announced today, even though they did release all of the information in the police reports. And it is really damning against Manziel, who, you know, we know about his problems, how well documented those problems have been, his problems in Cleveland, his problems before he even came into the NFL, and that extensive ESPN profile that summer before his final year at A&M. You know, the Browns were already done with him. When they hired Hugh Jackson as their head coach, pretty much. And that was confirmed after the information about this latest police encounter was released. And the Browns released a statement earlier this week via Sashi Brown, their VP of personnel and everything, just basically saying, you know, we can't make a decision about Manziel now because it is, frankly, against the league rules, but that they will make a decision when the time is appropriate and that they are deeply disturbed and disappointed in Manziel's inability to keep his nose clean and be, you know, respectful to himself and towards the organization. Basically, the Cleveland Browns could have possibly been able to cut Manziel this coming Monday, the day after the Super Bowl, when waivers open again in the National Football League. But because they carried over their approximately $17 million in 2015 cap space over to 2016 already, that money does not take an effect until the 2016 league year begins, which is March 9th, and they're expected to cut Johnny Manziel that same day. You know, obviously, this is unacceptable behavior for Johnny Manziel. This is a pattern of behavior. This is a guy who spent 2 months in rehab last year for undisclosed treatment. Whatever treatment that was doesn't seem to have taken, which is an understandable thing. People with substance abuse problems, you don't just go to rehab once and magically you're cured of your disease or whatever. It usually takes a few attempts at it. And whether or not Manziel will make any more attempts at it, we don't really know because he hasn't really been a responsible, you know, upstanding member of the community. And again, you know, he's assaulted his girlfriend. We'll have to see if the NFL, especially because they didn't do anything about Manziel after the first incident, but now that there's a second one, they might be more compelled to act. And if that is the case, I would imagine that no team is going to have any interest in picking up Manziel off of waivers, even for a low risk short term deal. And essentially, and it's my belief at least, that Johnny Manziel is not going to play another down of football. And that football shouldn't be his concern right now anyway, because he's got a lot of problems.
When was the bye week?
The bye week was
11?
Week 11.
Yeah, do you remember before that weekend?
When they gave him the starting job and said, just don't screw up?
Yeah.
And then he did promptly screw up?
Well, I'm just thinking about how up until that point, up until that bye week, there had been zero incidents since before rehab at the end of last year.
Well, there had been signs of him partying and being a little bit out of control. Obviously what happened on the side of the road with Colleen.
But that was before the bye week? Okay. Well, that even seemed like a blip. The other stuff was, I think, off season anyway. Basically, he was kind of clean at this point for this season.
He wasn't clean because there were times where he definitely showed up to work hungover or screwed up. But he was more focused on football this year than he was in his rookie year.
Well, I was just kind of
at least in his job.
I was mainly just referring to the narrative of everything, and that was that, you know, this is a new Johnny.
Well, he's working harder in the building.
He's
but not out the building.
Doing things that he needs to do, and we saw him on the field, and he was, showing some progress. I thought
as a football player,
I'm speaking strictly just the football perspective of him.
Sure.
And like, it just kills me that it's been not even 2.5 months, and this guy is. I would be completely surprised if we ever saw him again. And in the NFL, and it's
I feel like at this point we're only going to see him again in the context of kind of what happened with Ryan Leaf's career. And I don't want to draw parallels between Johnny Manziel and Ryan Leaf, and I'm not trying to do this to make Johnny Manziel a punchline, because I know a lot of people like to make fun of Ryan Leaf, but what Ryan Leaf has gone through since his time in the NFL has also been extremely
far from
disappointing and tragic.
Yeah, it's far from
a
joke.
It's hard not to see Manziel heading down that same path, especially when you combine that with the fact that he's already made $4 million as a quarterback, but his family's also quite wealthy too, and he's surrounded by a lot of people who enable his behavior, mm-hmm. excuse his behavior. Johnny's dad is like, he told the police, like, I'm not talking to you, no one's talking to you unless you show up here with a warrant, like slam the door in their face or hung up on them or whatever. And everybody's just kind of protecting Manziel from the outside world, when the situation is Manziel needs protection from himself. But at this point, he's an adult, mm-hmm. and he has to make those decisions for himself. And he did go to rehab last year, and I don't know what for, or what he learned there, or, what kind of things may have helped, and what didn't. But it's obvious right now that things are spiraling deeply out of control for Manziel. To the point where his ex-girlfriend is saying that he's threatening to kill her, threatening to kill himself. And
he's clearly on something, and
he's definitely on
something.
It's got to be more than it has to be more than alcohol. I've heard a few things speculated, mostly off the record, so I don't really want to go into it. But it seems it does look like it's not just that he's drinking,
right?
And it also drinking and substance abuse problems also do not excuse the fact that he is at least on two known occasions gotten violent with Colleen Crowley, mm-hmm. and that that's a separate issue. Then his substance abuse problems, and has more to do, I think, with just overall problems Manziel has. And the domestic violence is one symptom of them, and the substance abuse problem is a different symptom of mm-hmm. them. And it's an underlying thing that he really needs to address at this point, or he's destroyed his career, and he could destroy his life and the lives of others at this point. So hopefully this gets resolved in a positive way for everybody, and that we don't hear about this happening with Manziel again. But it's bad. It's not good. And something hopefully will serve as a wake-up call, because, this hasn't. I mean, he doesn't think he's defending himself to TMZ of all outlets. I'm completely in control. I was not out of control. I did not threaten to harm myself. I didn't harm anybody else. I'm focusing on getting my body right and dedicated myself to football. Like, these are the things that he's saying to TMZ.
Yeah, obviously he's been practicing those lines.
We've heard them all before. until he gets wised up to reality, I don't know if we're going to be hearing anything about positive progress from Johnny Manziel.
It's like you said. I think the whole football thing's kind of out of it at this point.
Johnny Manziel, football player, is not something that anybody should be concerned with.
And that's too bad. It's too bad. He was in college, certainly a fun player to watch. He had a very interesting skill set. I was always somewhat speculative of how well it would work in the league.
Sure.
And I think I said day one that he came in the league, I said, you know, this guy was fun to watch in college, but he's got a lot of work to do if he's going to be successful on this level. And, you know, some guys get there and they, you know, they turn up the amount of work they do, you know.
Yeah,
and
but work ethic has not been Mansell's strong suit.
And yeah, that's obviously the case. And so it's too bad that, you know, he's you know, potentially or basically squandered an opportunity here. But at the same time, that's really beside the point.
I mean,
what it is here is, you know, the guy obviously has some problems, and you know, hopefully he finds a way to get himself you know, fixed. And just from a personal, you know, life perspective, and you know, hopefully does that. I mean, if he can do that, and he's young enough, you know, maybe he can make a run if he really wanted it, you know. But that's it. Obviously, that's going to be secondary prior to or beyond him getting himself in order.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we are going to discuss Super Bowl 50, the reason why we're all here, right? We're going to talk about the Carolina Panthers, the Denver Broncos, and what it might take for these teams to defeat one another and ultimately make our decisions about who's going to win. So stay tuned here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
And it's good to be here where we landed up on Lex, stirring up the ground with the sound of Dougie Fresh and the horn-rocking kids that did it for the black when the Pumas on their feet and the Bombers on their back. We learned it and we earned it, so you know you got to hand it. We planned it when we left, how to freak it and to slam it. Add a ladybug, transformation is complete. For the metamorphosis from the box to the Jeep.
And it's good to be here, getting fly with the raps. We love it where we from, but we kick it where we at. Bumping out with something that pops and transcends. DP's baby is slick, but not thin. In amongst the pebbles, we rock on your blocks. Soaking in the ghetto for kids that have not.
And we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. It's time to talk all things Super Bowl 50, the NFC's top seed, the Carolina Panthers.
Wait, are we allowed to say that, or should we say the big game?
The big game? Yeah, I guess we're not officially licensed, right? And the number one seed in the AFC, the Denver Broncos, facing off on Sunday night. There's so many intriguing matchups here. I'm going to start with something that I've just been finding fascinating this whole time, and that's the takeaway giveaway situation. The Carolina Panthers have a plus 20 turnover differential on the season. Meanwhile, Peyton Manning threw 17 interceptions, second most in the league, even though he did not play the whole season, to 9 touchdowns. Now, he hasn't thrown any picks in the postseason, but given the ball-hawking ways of this Carolina defense, given Peyton Manning's inability to really be on target, especially when you're talking about deeper throws down the field, and it seems like a recipe for Peyton Manning getting picked off at least once.
At least once.
On Sunday night. The other thing that really, really interests me is the influence of Panthers middle linebacker Luke Kuechly. Mm-hmm. Now, Kuechly is for a middle linebacker to be in coverage as often as he is, he played, you know, most of his snaps were played in coverage, then it was run, and then it was pass rush. And when you talk about what he does out there, okay, he's given up no touchdowns this season. He's had 4 interceptions. He had a pick 6 in the playoffs against the Arizona Cardinals. And Peyton Manning at this point is relying as a passer on that intermediate passing game because he can't really get the ball down the field. He's either over or under throwing Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're focused on that middle of the field throwing and you've got guys like Luke Kuechly.
Get the best coverage linebacker
in the league. The best coverage linebacker in the league out there. And I feel like if you kill that short passing game, force Manning to throw these errant throws deep, passes that Josh Norman et al. Can pick off.
Mm-hmm.
And
right, it's not like they have schlubs back there at the corner
they don't
either.
Schlubs back there at corner, then have schlubs out there at safety, and it looks that would be a recipe for a Carolina win. But at the same time, you've got this Denver Broncos defense, the best defense in the league. You know, tops against the pass, number 3 against the run, and you can't discount that. You can't discount the fact that, you know, they've been generating turnovers themselves, not in the same way as the Panthers, who are also scoring points off of turnovers unlike any other team in the league. It's kind of shocking. The Kansas City Chiefs are like the number 2 team in points off of turnovers, and the Panthers have almost like 100 more points than them or something, or 60 or 80 points more off of turnovers, something crazy. But at the same time, you got Cam Newton, and it's going to be really hard to game plan for that kind of quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pass rush of the Denver Broncos, which has been so strong all year, doesn't work the same way when you have not just a mobile quarterback like Cam Newton, but a physical quarterback like Cam Newton who can also throw the ball. He is not a one-dimensional mm-hmm. quarterback. One way, of course, the Broncos can do this is by choking off that run game. Not just Cam's ability to run, but also Jonathan Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And to a lesser extent, you know, Mike Tolbert. But at the same time, in order to, you know, cut off that run game, you don't want to open up the passing game. Because Cam has proven that he can kill you even with weapons like Ted Ginn Jr. Mm-hmm. and Philly Brown out there. So it's going to be quite the chess match. You know, trying to force Peyton Manning to throw deep and make mistakes, trying to figure out how to bottle up Cam Newton, both as a passer and a runner. So I feel like these are really well-matched teams to face each other to really see who is the top dog in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Especially with both of these defenses, as you pointed out, they're both extremely good in different ways, but also in the same in similar ways.
Sure.
And
because they're definitely, I mean, the Carolina is still very aggressive up front.
Sure,
which is what allows them to make those kind of plays in the secondary, because you got a lot of pressure in a quarterback's face, and he's not going to have time to throw an accurate pass.
Yeah, I mean, their defensive front has been, you know, one of the better ones in the league. You know, not quite statistically as good as Denver's, but definitely very solid.
Very,
and they've been getting great play from their interior line, like Kawhan Short, all year too. So. That's the thing is there, the Carolina's defense is, I don't know that it matches up statistically as well, but I'd say it's right there as
in
far
terms
as
of game changing, game affecting plays,
overall ability mm-hmm. and just quality of defense. I'd say it's very similar. It's on a similar level at least. In like I said, slightly different ways, but, definitely as effective. And, you know, Cam is really the X factor in my mind, in that, you know, Denver's been this good all year, but they haven't.
But
you know,
Cam has been.
There's only one Cam, and there's only a couple guys that are that kind of have, you know, similar skill sets that are quality, you know, starters in the league, but none of them are can do it quite as well as Cam on either run or pass.
Right.
So, and like you said. If they want to, you know, bottle down or bottle up, I guess that run game of Carolina's, that's easier said than done. I mean, their offensive line has been just unreal this year.
I mean,
year.
Michael Oher at left tackle, who knew? And then, I mean, no team has run the ball more than the Carolina Panthers this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've amassed an incredible amount of rushing touchdowns. Of course, 10 of those belonging to Cam Newton, but that can't be understated. Just well, 10 are Cam's. Yeah, 10 are Cam's. And you know, being a top run defense like Denver is doesn't mean that every single time they're facing a running back or a rushing offense that they're getting stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been times this year where teams have successfully ran the ball against
mm-hmm.
Denver.
Absolutely. And that running offense that Carolina has is kind of its own animal, and it's really tough to prepare against. And like you said, if you're that's your game plan going in, is we're gonna keep them from running the ball.
Then you're gonna have to have a spy on Cam that whole time, and that spy on Cam is not gonna be out there helping in coverage.
Exactly,
he's not gonna be helping in pass rush.
It should very well provide some opportunities in the passing game, and we've seen. I mean, that's the thing is like it's not like we've seen Cam do this all year with a clean pocket where he's dropping back and throws it all over the place because there's all kinds of time. We've seen him in the face of pressure. Make incredible plays, and obviously it's going to take a lot of that incredible plays. But I you know, I'm comfortable thinking that we'll see that on Sunday. And you know, we've seen him with guys right there, and he like makes these. It's similar to the way Russell Wilson can escape pressure and extend plays. It's different than the Ben Roethlisberger style, where Ben is just a tank that's really hard to flip over, and he just kind of barrels through and still gets a pass off. Where it's closer to Russell Wilson's game of there's a guy there, and all of a sudden he makes this incredible move, just athletic move to get away from that, and then
but
all of a sudden
Cam adds power to that.
Exactly, because he's huge. So you know, his ability to escape the pressure. It's going to be a completely different game plan than Denver had against New England, or it should be, because that was all, you know,
that's Tom Brady in the pocket. Let's smash him.
And again, they were only using three guys to and they were effectively getting
a three-man rush is not going to work against Cam
Newton. I can't see how that's going to hold up. Mainly because Carolina's offensive line, it compared to New England's offensive line a couple weeks ago, is not the same thing.
No.
And so it's really going to be tough to get the pressure with limited numbers like that. And then you can drop all those guys back. You're only sending three. Well, I mean, if you don't get to him, or you get to him but he gets away, you know, you're going to be in trouble because there's going to be a lot of room for him to run, and he is not afraid to do that.
The other thing worth talking about, too, is the Denver Broncos run game. And obviously not as prolific, not as productive as Carolina's has been this year. But it's been an integral part of Peyton Manning being successful on the field. Because Peyton Manning is kind of living and dying right now by the play-action pass. Right now, on plays where he is employing play-action, he is averaging over 3 more yards per attempt than non-play-action passes. And he has a 25-point higher passer rating when throwing play-action pass, doing play-action passing, rather than, you know, non-play-action, traditional pocket kind of dropbacks. So that's going to be interesting because – in order to have a successful play-action passing game, you have to, even if the run is not producing, you have to stick with it. But Carolina, much like Denver, has a very stout run defense. So I feel like a good defensive strategy for Carolina is to stop Denver's ability to run and to desire to run the ball very early on, so that you don't have these play-action opportunities open for Peyton Manning. Therefore, he's already in a situation where he's less successful on the field. Then, if you're cutting off that middle of the field with Luke Kuechly and that coverage, where Manning is most comfortable in terms of depth of attempt, and he has to go deep with these guys like Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, who he's struggled to connect with on a consistent basis this year, that could just be the dominoes, you know, the domino effect of Denver's offense breaking down.
Right. And I mean, I don't necessarily think that Denver can't win this game.
No, I mean, this is Peyton Manning's probably last hurrah. You know, and I mean, just look at, you know, a couple years ago with the Baltimore Ravens, and everybody knew that Ray Lewis was retiring, and that was a huge motivating factor for that team throughout
the whole team. It helps everybody
and
raise their
so
level of
play. So rallying around saying, let's do this for Peyton Manning. This is Peyton's last go. Let's get him a ring before he retires so he doesn't just retire with a Super Bowl loss. And so you can't discount just that emotional impact of the Manning situation.
Absolutely not, especially with the
he's a savvy veteran.
Peyton Manning is arguably the best quarterback of all time.
He's a generational talent, at the very least.
Again, I think it's hard to argue that he's the same quarterback as he was 5 or 10 years ago.
It's impossible. He's older. He's had multiple neck surgeries.
Yeah, so it's makes sense that he's not exactly the same guy. But they're you know, make no mistake, they're in the Super Bowl because of him, because because of the way he's been changing his approach to the game.
Sure.
And it has been more of a game manager situation.
It's been a game manager situation because he can.
Which is fine.
He does have the luxury of that because he has such a good defense that obviously helps the offense
out. I would
out.
Just argue that he's the best game manager ever, if you want to go that route.
Sure, I'm not opposed to that because I don't think game manager is an insult.
I think a perfect example is that the week 17, Broncos are playing the Chargers in Denver, and the Chargers were bringing it.
That was on our drive back from Florida.
It was the night before, or the day before, I think. No, that was because that was week 17. But regardless.
We were driving.
Yeah. They had Osweiler in there, and because they were trying to save him and all this. And it's not even that Osweiler was single-handedly responsible for them struggling in that game.
No, this isn't like when Manning got pulled after he broke the record because he went 5 of 20 for 4 interceptions.
Right. No,
they were dealing with a torn plantar fascia.
They were definitely hoping to save him for the playoffs. They were trying to get one more win out of Osweiler
so they could keep that number one seed.
But they really needed that win for the number one seed, and obviously that was important. And you could see immediately they put Peyton in the game, and he wasn't his old Peyton self.
No,
there was a lot of the same problems.
He was setting up to what ended up being a 23-yard Ronnie Hillman touchdown.
Right.
You know, and it's not like he threw a game-winning pass.
But that's the thing is that it was his
You can't
put his brain in Brock Osweiler.
No.
And so it
there's limits to medical technology in 2016.
so that was that.
You
that
know,
game,
Elway's just sitting there, be like, could we put his brain in Brock Osweiler's body?
But yeah, that game completely changed after he came in, and it was due to the fact that he was doing things at the quarterback position that Brock Osweiler couldn't, and it had nothing to do with his arm. It had everything to do with his brain.
With his brain and his experience and his understanding.
Exactly, and he knew what to do. He knew how to check out of this and check into that and make those calls at the line to exploit a weakness that he saw in the defense, things that you just can't teach.
Right.
It's something that comes.
Right, and that's going to be in effect on Sunday.
That.
Absolutely.
And so that's how they got there, and you know, like you said, that come Sunday, you know, that's his best asset right now. It's not his arm and his ability to throw the ball as much as his ability to understand offense and what can be effective in a given situation.
Right.
But with that, you know, obviously, you know, he isn't the same as he used to be. I think that makes everything much tougher for them as a team. If they're getting by with his managerial ability, if you will, you know, they're going to go into the biggest game against this crazy good defense. And that's like we've discussed, you know, almost ad nauseum at this point in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Their ability to defend the pass coupled with their ability to shut down a run. And it's a tall, tall order.
You know, let's get to the prediction part of our discussion here. Because the one thing that I really think about when making my prediction here, because I do I see situations where either team can win this game. You know, it's Peyton Manning. He's about to retire. It's his knowledge on the football field. It's that really strong defense that's played really well all year. But at the same time, I can put together, like I just did earlier when we were talking here, I can put together a defensive game plan for Carolina to basically be able to stop or slow or shut down Denver's offense. And I can also figure out a way for Denver's offense to get the ball moving as long as they can kind of take it, you know, take advantage of some of the weaknesses in that defense and you know, Manning can kind of poke holes in certain schemes and situations. But I cannot think of a proper defensive philosophy to take to shut down Carolina's offense, both the run and the pass, because Cam can destroy you either way. And even if Cam runs for 5 yards in this game, what does that mean for Jonathan Stewart? And what does that mean for the passes that Cam is throwing? And I just can't see Denver successfully figuring out the solution for Cam Newton over these past 2 weeks. And that's why I'm going to go with the Panthers. I do think, you know, and there's arguments for defense wins championships and therefore Denver's defense and carried the team all year. But yeah, at the same time, Carolina's defense plus 20 in the turnover differential.
That's the thing.
Cam's only thrown 10 picks this year. They've barely turned the ball over. And then they amass so many turnovers. They lead the league in fumbles recovered. They lead the league in interceptions. And they lead the league in points scored off of those turnovers that the offense is able to capitalize after the defense forces the turnover. It can't be understated enough how, you know, turnovers can change the game, but points off of turnovers completely change a game. And coupling that with, yeah, Peyton Manning hasn't thrown any picks in the postseason yet, but 17 interceptions to 9 touchdowns in the regular season. And granted, he's healthy now. He's healthier. He's not dealing with the foot. He's not dealing with the ribs and all the things that had him off his game earlier in the season. But you still can't ignore that, you know, it wasn't just because he was a bit injured or he was dealing with injuries that he threw all of those picks. He's also just not the same guy throwing the ball. And I think they can put him in situations where he's going to make those kind of interceptable passes, especially when, again, you've got, you know, Keekly and all these guys in the intermediate coverage zones. So for that reason, I'm going to go with the Panthers. Again, I would not be surprised if the Broncos win. I do not think this is going to be a particularly high-scoring game. I would be surprised if either of these teams hit 30 points. I'd be surprised if either of these teams hit 27 points. But it feels like the Panthers' year. It feels like Cam Newton's year. It just seems like it's all, you know, going to this point where it's kind of the changing of the guard. Like, this is it for Peyton Manning. He appears in his last Super Bowl as, you know, a generational talent, and then it's the rise of a new generational talent like we've seen this year in Cam Newton. So I'm going with the Panthers. I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos won. I'm not going to be disappointed either way, because either way, it's Peyton Manning getting that ring before he retires, which is a narrative that I love, and that's a very good defense, and it's Wade Phillips, and that all makes me happy. And what I've seen out of Carolina and Cam and Ron Rivera and Kuechly and all these guys this year, I'm going to be happy for either team, but I think Carolina. I'm giving Carolina the edge.
I'll say I can see this working out a number of ways. It's not outside the realm of possibility for Denver to – for that defense to, you know, continue doing what it's doing.
I mean, because I can't think of a way to stop Cam Newton in that offense doesn't mean that there isn't a way to do it. I mean, this is Wade Phillips. I'm not Wade Phillips.
Right.
He would know better than I.
I'm just saying that I think their defense is just – they're really good. They're that good that, you know, I could see that, you know, them – having effect on the game, potentially they're able to cause turnovers. Potentially they're able to actually get to Cam, which is easier said than done. But maybe they can. Maybe Von Miller is just out of his mind, and we saw that last week or a week and a half ago in the AFC Championship
yep.
game. Von Miller is just playing on another level, and if he keeps that up, you know, potentially he can get to Cam, and you know if they're
well,
able.
Well, it's not just him too. I mean, you've got. You know, DeMarcus Ware, you've got Malik Jackson, you've
right.
got Derek Wolfe.
Right.
You got some good interior pass rush there, too.
Their rush is just really good, and they have very solid secondary and pass defense and all that. So that defense is good enough that I can see them, you know, potentially getting something worked out where they can kind of marginalize this or maybe get a turnover here and maybe they can squeak their way out to a win. Personally, I feel like the Panthers will probably win in a relatively close game. I'm thinking somewhere in the 24-20, 24-17-ish sort of situation.
The Madden simulation, which has been pretty close to spot on the last few years, has Carolina winning 24-20, just
okay.
in case you
so,
are curious.
So, yeah, something like that I can see. Maybe even 27-21, something along those lines.
I feel like 27 is the ceiling for points for a single team in this game.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. And I'm not necessarily saying that this is my official prediction.
Well, they almost put a 50 burger on the Cardinals two weeks ago.
The thing is, I don't see Denver running away from this game, or running away with this game. I see that as a possibility for Carolina, and it's the same way it happened to Arizona.
Sure.
It was that the offense was a little bit harder to stop than they thought. Or than they hoped.
Than Arizona had hoped.
Yeah. And then
Carson Palmer had a bad
and
day.
And then Carson Palmer had a bad day. And then there's turnovers and turnover pick six it snowballs on you.
Mm-hmm.
And like I could see that happening here. I'm not going to say that I think that's my number one prediction. I'm just saying I see that as a possibility. I don't see that as a possibility for Denver to snowball things on Carolina, and they're out of it and they can't do it, you know?
Right.
That plus, you know, the way Carolina's scrapped their way, we've discussed this before on the show.
The many ways they've won games
so many,
this year.
The myriad ways they've won, and it's been comebacks, it's been blowouts, it's been, they've just
it's
won.
It's been defense, it's been running the
exactly.
ball, it's been passing the ball, it's, yeah, they've,
so,
we've discussed that,
my,
it's been special teams.
My official call, I guess, is Carolina winning within 10 points. I mean, I guess that's not too much of a stretch. I'm kind of following Vegas on that, but that is really kind of where I see it. I think Denver's good enough to keep things close, but I think Carolina is just a bit too dynamic on offense, and their defense is still so good. Everybody wants to talk about Denver's defense, but Carolina is right there in being nearly as good. And you know, statistically, a defense, you know, you only face the teams you face. So, you
right.
know, if Carolina played that exact same schedule as Denver did, who's to say that Carolina's defense wouldn't be statistically better? I don't know. And
right.
I feel like that defense is close enough. Carolina's defense is close enough being as good as Denver. And but that Carolina offense is firing right now. And,
sure.
and I don't think you can say the same thing about Denver. And
right.
So I think maybe Denver's defense is good enough to keep the game close, but I think Carolina wins.
All right. Well, those are our official Super Bowl 50 predictions and our preview as well for the F-Ball NFL podcast, which means it's time to take a quick break and send the show home.
Yes.
So we'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Stay tuned. we're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and that about does it for this week's episode.
Yes.
Only one game left.
I think we're ready.
Only one football game left to watch until the preseason starts up again in August. Can you believe it? That's it. It's over.
Yeah.
One game. Just the Super Bowl stands between now and next season.
That's right. You know, Sunday will happen, and you know, Monday will come around, and everybody will take a big breath, and people will lament that they won't see football until August. But that's fine. You know, I think every sport needs its off season to kind of just take a step back.
Besides, in the NFL, there's barely an off season because it's the scouting combine at the end of the month, and then the new league year starts on March 9th.
It's an off season as far as games go, sure. but yeah, you're right.
There's going to be a lot of activity.
There's plenty of stuff to keep everybody busy in the meantime between the combine and the draft and all that stuff. So.
But let's, you know, for now, let's focus on the positive. We still got one football game left.
Yes.
It's the biggest one of them all. Super
and it
Bowl
be fun.
50.
It should be a good game.
So all you out there in podcast listening F-ball land, enjoy the game on Sunday. I hope everybody has fun, eats well, doesn't get into any fights, doesn't burn their house down, doesn't lose a bunch of money.
Don't flip out because you saw Coldplay at halftime.
Don't flip out because you saw Coldplay at halftime. Just eat through it. We'll be back next time here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast to talk about Super Bowl fallout and the inevitable news and notes that will come out of the post-Super Bowl era, especially because, you know, starting Monday, for example, teams can start waiving players, so we'll see if there are any surprise cuts that come early in the offseason.
There'll be some newsworthy stuff to discuss
There'll
next
be news
next
worthy
time.
Stuff
yes.
to discuss. But until then, enjoy the Super Bowl. And, of course, I am Andrea Hanks. I'm the host here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. You can find my coverage of the National Football League at sportsonearth.com and thecomeback.com, and my coverage of the Cleveland Browns at scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. You can also find me on Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian, and outside of the podcast, you can find me on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, until we meet again, dear listeners, who we all love so much and appreciate you so much, enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll be back next time to break it all down and recap whatever there is to recap.
Absolutely.
Peace. But they do jazz it up. So let's bring them out here.
Thank you, word cross. Ever since I was a caterpillar, I dreamt of, you know, slamming up earth, so we're gonna try to do it tonight. Let me introduce the insects, the players to you. On life, my main man, this cat is bad, check him out. C-No, the doodlebug, around. On wide grooves, silkworm. On vibes, what? Yo, chill, man. I don't even know you, man. What are you talking about? Yo, bring it back, right now. Yeah, as I was saying, on vibes, waves, and feelings, the ladybug, Miss Mac, yeah. And on thoughts and tongue, and a little bit of acid, yours truly, Mr. Butterfly. The mind is time, the mind is space, a horn brush, a bass flush, but mine's to take, so...